Hello and welcome to the Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live. We've got a great lineup for you today. Second hour, Tim Staples will be here, and we're going to do kids open forum. So if you are a kid or you know a kid, and if you are a kid and if you have permission to dial the phone, second hour, you can ask any question you want about Jesus, about the Bible, about the Catholic faith, about Christianity in general. Second hour. First hour, I did not realize this date was coming up, but Monday is the 100th birthday of Pope John Paul II, our sainted and great Pope John Paul II. Well, in kind of recognition of this 100th anniversary, this 100th year of the birth of our great Pope, there's a brand new book out called 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World, and it's by our good friend Patrick Nowakowski. And I can tell you, Patrick, you're not going to be disappointed. This is one of the great writers and communicators in the Catholic world. He's won a bunch of awards for his writing, for his journalism from the Catholic Press Association. He actually met Pope St. John Paul II five times. Patrick Nowakowski, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, it's great to be with you on Catholic Answers Live, Si.
So I have to say, 100 ways Pope John Paul II changed the world, you probably had to narrow the list down to get to 100.
Yeah, I started with 10, and I've been talking about that in talks that I give across the country for the last 10 years. And that was kind of the nugget where I started, the big things that he did in broad strokes. But yeah, when I started about a year ago to come up with a list, I grew that to 70. And by the time I finished writing, I had a list of at least 150, and I could have gone even deeper than that.
If you've got a question for our guest author, Patrick Nowakowski, about 100 ways John Paul II changed the world, or any question about John Paul II, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884 on this 100th anniversary of the birth of Pope John Paul II. Great time to remember and talk about him and reflect on him. And your questions are welcome, 888-318-7884. The other thing I couldn't believe when Darren told me that we're in the 100th anniversary is 15 years since he died. What happened? It flew.
It went by very fast. But you know, one thing that cued for me when I was writing this is that most of the kids that are, I call them kids because I'm old, but the kids that are graduating from high school this year, they were 3 years old when John Paul II died. They didn't know him.
No.
Matter of fact, they probably didn't even pay attention to Benedict's pontificate. The only pope that they really recognize is Pope Francis. He's been pope for 7.5 years or so now, or is it 8?
Yeah, I don't know, but you're right. And I guess us old people, I mean, for a generation and a half, the only pope that a lot of young people knew was Pope John Paul II. He was the face of the church for so long that people, I mean, I think there was almost an adjustment period to Pope Benedict, as close as he was to Pope John Paul II, because it just was so jarring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there used to be this joke, well, is the Pope Italian? And then John Paul came along and the joke changed. Well, is the Pope Polish? Of course he is.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of the ways that Pope John Paul II changed the world.
Oh, gosh, where to start? You know, I start off the book on talking about religious liberty, because core to everything that John Paul II taught was this correct understanding of the human person. Who are we? How did God create us? What are we meant for? What is the meaning of purpose of life? And John Paul, growing up under first the Nazi regime and then the communist regime all the way well into his pontificate, he understood that religious liberty was core to our fundamental rights as human persons. And so I started from there at number 100 and flowed all the way through to his friendship with Ronald Reagan, his interactions with Padre Pio and Mother Teresa, his friendship with Ronald Reagan, I mentioned that, his devotion to the Divine Mercy message, his canonization and starting the cause of Sister Faustina, the great apostle of Divine Mercy. So many.
It's just an extraordinary life. I mean, I don't know how many popes have the appellation the Great added after their name. I mean, certainly so quickly after his death, but it just seemed obvious. He's among the greatest of the popes.
Yeah, there are two, Pope Leo the Great and
Gregory the Great.
Gregory the Great. There you go. That was on the tip of my tongue. Those are the only two. And it was, and that title comes from the faithful, the people who acclaim him as the Great. And I really believe that's going to stick. We already have a university and several high schools across the United States and many in Poland schools named after John Paul the Great.
888-318-7884, our number if you'd like to get in on our conversation about Pope, St. Pope. See, this is the problem with him, though. I mean, St. Pope John Paul II, is that right? Or Pope St. John Paul?
Well, it's funny. I had it mixed up, too, until I got clarification from George Weigel. George wrote
me
back,
know.
And he said, Pope St. John Paul II.
Well, where do you put the Great in there, though? Pope, St. Thanks, George, but I got to get them all in.
You can string that out. Pope St. John Paul the Great. There you go.
Okay, so maybe some misconceptions about him. Maybe some, if you could tell me, like, on this, I mean, Monday will be the actual 100th birthday of Pope John Paul, but some misconceptions or ways people maybe misunderstand him, or things that when people talk about him, you say, no, that's not who he was.
Wow. That's a question I haven't had. Things that people didn't, I don't know.
Well,
I honestly, you stumped me.
Okay, good. I finally did. I finally stumped Patrick, but I suppose he really was. There's no way to separate his papacy from the Second Vatican Council. And so I suppose some of the way my generation looked at him early on was, oh, conservative, reactionary. He's going back to the time before the council.
Yeah, no, he was, he was elected a bishop in 1958. The council started in 62. He was one of the youngest bishops in the world at the time the council started. And so he would have been 42 at the beginning of the council. He was instrumental in crafting many of the key documents that came out of the council. And they said that when he was pope, when he was elected pope in 78, he already knew how to be the pope because he was so intimate with the council. Because so many of the bishops and cardinals knew him, knew his intellect, and knew his genius. So when you look at the documents and speeches that he gave throughout his pontificate, every single one of them, almost without exception, refers back to the council. He points back to the council. So that's actually one of my top 10 ways he changed the world, is that he unpacked the Second Vatican Council in a consistent way over his 26 and a half years as pope.
When he became pope, it was not at all clear that that was even possible. There was a real sense that there was a kind of shattering that happened in the late 60s, early 70s. And a clear enunciation of what the council had actually done and what it meant going forward didn't seem likely in 1978.
That's right. There was a lot of confusion that came out of the council. There was the documents of the council, the word of the council. Then there was the spirit of the council, which was a broad, great misinterpretation, actually, of what the council was teaching. And there were great liberties taken with the mass, with the Catholic tradition. In the book, I document some of the ways that the Jesuit order, God bless them, had taken liberties with the mass by basically allowing lay people to give the homily, basically making up the liturgy as they went along. And John Paul actually had to call the order to task, remove their leader and appoint another Jesuit who was, within the Vatican's favor to kind of get the order back on track because of these misinterpretations of the council.
888-318-7884, our number. But it's not, he's not just a reactionary. He's not just saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. He has a positive, actual positive agenda that comes out of the council.
Oh, sure. He had an absolute agenda to get the council understood in the proper way. Everything from the liturgy to seminaries and seminary education. Out of the council came a synod celebrating the anniversary of the council. I believe it was the 20th anniversary of the close of the council, was this idea to produce a universal catechism for the Catholic Church. And that was an initiative of John Paul II that he handed to Cardinal Ratzinger, and then Father Schönborn, who became later Cardinal Schönborn, Archbishop of Vienna.
Yeah, it's. I really do think young people today, even those who love him, and I'll tell you what, when we come back, before I go to calls, I want to ask you about the theology of the body, because a lot of young people love him and know him primarily for something that he was hardly known for at all while he was alive, which is the theology of the body. It took time for that to catch on. But I think a lot of these young people who know him and love him, they don't even realize the extent to which the way that they experience the Catholic Church is a consequence of what he did, that they would have had a completely different experience of Catholic Church had he not been elected in 1978.
Yeah, no question. No question.
Patrick, go ahead, Patrick. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, you wanted me to respond to the theology of the body.
You know what? Do you mind if we do our break, and we'll do it when we come back?
Let's do it after the break.
Okay, we'll do it when we come back. We'll allow Marie to process some of these calls. 888-318-7884, the number. It's kind of a celebration in my mind. I mean, and the book is certainly a celebration. 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. I think the 100th anniversary of his birth is a great reason to rejoice. He is the man of the 20th century, I would say. I imagine, I'll ask you when we come back, Patrick, to see what you think about that. But also that theology of the body, that he came up with, that has really, really, in a sneaky way, has become central to the faith life of so many young people these days. Take a look at all that and continue our look at the papacy of Pope John Paul II with Patrick Nowakowski right after this.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
We need to pray because God says to pray. We don't need to pray to change God's mind. We pray because that is our big connection to the Almighty. Do we need it? Like we need air? Like we need water? Yep. Because if, in fact, God is the ultimate reality, more reality than air and water, then we do need to pray as much as we need to breathe.
Oh, I'm so happy that we get a chance to talk about Pope John Paul II and prepare you, get you ready for Monday, which is the 100th anniversary of his birth. I had to admit, I think I was one of the grumblers in some of the early days. It took me a while to figure out, oh, I see what he's doing. This is a little thing called the Catholic faith, and I should be on board with it. Let's just say those were confusing times. So it's very nice to have author Patrick Nowakowski here with us today to talk about his new book, 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. It's from our Sunday Visitor Press, and you can find it, you know, wherever you get your Catholic books. Our number, 888-318-7884. And callers, I am going to get to you, but I left that dangling question there about theology of the body. Just your thoughts on why that's so appealing to young people, and what it means that he took his audiences for years to elucidate this Christian understanding of the human body.
Sure. The theology of the body was the first major teaching of his pontificate in 130 or so different talks at the Wednesday audience in St. Peter's Square from 1979 to, I think, 1984 or so. But it has its genesis back into his time as a priest and as a bishop in Poland. As a young priest, he ministered to young people, and he got to form some very deep friendships with them that stayed. They stayed friends throughout his entire pontificate all the way to his death. And these people became very close friends. They became kind of the laboratory, I guess, for John Paul's thought and teaching on the human person. When he met them, they were young, they were dating, they were falling in love, they were getting married, they were having children. And he saw this happening, and it really started him thinking about the human person and the human body and human sexuality from a Catholic perspective. And of course, he was a philosopher, so he had some very profound insights into all of this, which kind of coalesced in 1960 in a book called Love and Responsibility. And that was really the starting point of his theology of the body. And if you think about the history of the 20th century, the sexual revolution kind of started going in 64, 65 and was in full bloom by the mid-70s. John Paul was ahead of the curve. You know,
right.
But this was at the time of Alfred Kinsey and all these really crazy ideas about human sexuality. So I think he saw that and said, we need some solid teaching here. And he really was ahead of his time. And with the theology of the body, which he started teaching in 79, again, I think he was really well ahead of the curve in teaching human sexuality from a grounded theological, philosophical perspective that really resonated with how we're created. And answering some of the deepest questions that humans should be asking, but I think in our day are just not asking at all.
Yeah, certainly, Pope. We have so much to be grateful for in Pope Paul VI with Humanae Vitae, 1968. Mm-hmm. He makes clear that there's a fundamental nature to marriage and sexuality that the church is just not going to change on because it can't change on. But John Paul takes all of that and turns it from a no to a yes, kind of. Instead of just talking about the boundary, he talks about what is the positive good that the church wants for people.
Right. How are we created? Why am I created man? Why am I created woman? What's the purpose of our sexual identity? And how does that point to God? What's the purpose of it? And you know, what is marriage? How does that relate to God from a biblical theological perspective? And he unpacked all that, and it really makes sense. And in our sexually confused day that we live in, I think it's more important now than ever. And really, Catholic lay people in the United States are the leaders in unpacking the theology of the body. George Weigel once said that it's a theological time bomb set to go off well after John Paul II leaves the stage. And
right.
Here we are 15 years after his death. And you're exactly right. It's being unpacked under our noses and changing the world.
Really, really, truly changing the world. One hopes that it will protect societies that have not been poisoned by the sexual revolution from fully drinking in the poison. But you can even see, and I mean, we hear from some priests and bishop in places like France, where where people are starting to get it, that there is a counter argument to the sexual revolution that is much more deeply humane and loving and full. And that John Paul has made that counter argument, I think Weigel is right on about it being it's starting to go off now, but it's hundreds of years, I think, that we'll benefit from that. I want to get to go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, no, I'd say we're seeing that in Africa too, that the Western culture trying to impose all sorts of abortion and contraception on their culture, where it's abhorrent to their culture already natively. But because of John Paul's work in Africa, I think it's really solidified what they already know.
Yeah, I think there's many people in Western countries, in the United States and foundations and things who really believe Africa won't be a fully humane place until everyone there is as selfish as we are. And when when we get them there, then they'll have made progress. And the theology body stands against that.
Absolutely.
Patrick Nowakowski's new book is 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. Your calls are welcome, 888-318-7884. I have left callers waiting, however, so let me go to Mike in Albany, New York. Mike, thank you so much for your call, comment or question for Patrick Nowakowski.
Hey, Patrick, I had a quick thought, too. There was an assassination attempt twice. Is that correct? He was shot one year, and the following year he was stabbed?
Yeah, that's quite a story. So he was shot in St. Peter's Square on May 13th, 1981. And I'm not sure of the year, but you are correct. A priest who was in the Philippines stabbed John Paul II, drew blood. It wasn't a serious injury, but the priest was apprehended. He was highly disturbed and taken into custody. But they minimized that attack simply because they didn't want to distract from John Paul's work that he was doing on this pilgrimage to the Philippines.
That's fascinating. I didn't even know that story. So, caller, you also had something else you wanted to...
I'm sorry, you said Mike?
Yeah, Mike, go ahead. You had something else you wanted to ask Patrick?
Yeah, I was curious, prior to John Paul, Vatican II, was there any pope that did events like Assisi, because I thought that was greatly frowned on, religious indifferentism and whatnot.
Would you put yourself in that category? Do you feel critical of the World Day of Prayer in Assisi?
Clear violation of the first commandment. I mean, God says don't have any strange gods before me, so that's very concerning for me that I can't get myself around that.
I don't think you're alone at all. I think when Pope John Paul is criticized, among the first things that will be mentioned are the World Day of Prayer. Patrick, any thoughts? The first question was historical. Did any other pope ever do that? But then if you want to elaborate.
Yeah, no, I don't think any other pope had gathered the world religious leaders in a place to have dialogue. Certainly not to the degree that Pope John Paul II did in gathering them in Assisi. I think you have to look, though, at his intent. It is just to build bridges, to build understanding among various religions, but not to necessarily, learn anything from them, but just to have peace, to have understanding and solidarity on some of the issues that we all agree on, human rights, religious liberty, essentially, and things like that. But certainly that is one of the things that he was highly criticized for.
Mike?
Yeah, I think Father Pacwa had even mentioned that he allowed them to use Catholic altars for their own worship, which really bothered me very, very greatly. Even when I was younger, when that was happening, I was like, you can't do that. You can't replace the Blessed Sacrament with a Buddha
I don't believe that John Paul II had anything to do with those decisions. If they were made at the local level, and of course they were in error.
How many years was he Pope?
John Paul II, 26 and a half.
26 and a half years. So I really don't think, it would be superhuman to have nothing to criticize in 26 and a half years. So Mike, your critique is welcome. I appreciate Patrick's answer. Thank you very much for the call. We're approaching the 100th anniversary. Monday, we get to celebrate 100 years since the birth of Pope John Paul II. The book is 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. And your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Oh, you know what? Let's go to another caller real quick. Josh in Maryland. Hang on, Josh. Let me get the right button. Josh in Maryland, your comment or question for Patrick Nowakowski.
Hey, I got a question. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yeah, but a little closer to the phone, please.
All right. So I got a question. So I'm very new to Catholicism, and before I became Catholic, there was a lot of people who were accusing John Paul II of engaging like ecumenism. They cite a incident in Assisi there where we had like Buddhist monks and like people from other religions
inside
a Catholic church with like idols. Now, and people have posted all these pictures of him like kissing a Quran. I just want better context. of what was going on.
Okay, Josh, just because we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you, I don't want to cut you too short, but I think we get the tenor of the question, that Josh is new to Catholicism before he became Catholic. Even he was already hearing criticisms that Pope John Paul was too ecumenical. He mentioned Assisi again. He also mentioned the time that Pope John Paul kissed the Quran.
Sure. Yeah, I got the question. Again, valid criticisms. We had already addressed the issue of Assisi. He gathered world religious leaders to have dialogue, to build bridges, to keep the channels of communication open. That wasn't necessarily an ecumenical effort in the traditional sense, but it was to build that understanding. If there are any idols, that was done by someone else, and he did kiss the Quran. We can talk about that later.
Okay, Josh, hang on. We got to take a break because Patrick's hanging on because the music's playing. So we'll take this break. We'll come right back. Anybody's welcome with your comments or questions about Pope John Paul II at 888-318-7884.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
How can the Eucharist truly be Christ's body? Does belief in the real presence mean that Catholics are cannibals? Do the Bible and early Christians support Catholic teaching on the Eucharist? In 20 Answers, the Eucharist, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you deepen your own appreciation for this most precious sign of Christ's enduring presence in the world. 20 Answers the Eucharist is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Does the Church have too many rules? Join me, Dr. David Anders, as we answer your questions right here on Called to Communion, Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
I love Pope John Paul II. I think that the appellation "the Great" is perfectly appropriate for the man. But he's a man. He's not God incarnate. But
underwriting.
So it's not surprising that we have some critiques as we talk about the 100th anniversary of his birth with the author of the brand new book, 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World, from our Sunday Visitor Press, Patrick Nowakowski. But Josh is on the line, and Josh's call is particularly poignant to me because he's a person newly coming to the Catholic Church, and he has heard these critiques about Pope John Paul II. And I actually think that's a kind of common phenomenon now, is that people being attracted to the Catholic Church, and what they hear about Pope John Paul II is he kissed a Quran. And that's kind of a disqualifier. And so maybe the larger story doesn't get told or doesn't seep in. But Josh, your question seems entirely sincere and honorable. Patrick, a little more on the kissing of the Quran.
Sure. It was late in John Paul's pontificate. He was meeting with some Islamic leaders. And I do go into this in the book as well. It's one of the things that there were many questions about at the time. And the Vatican never really gave a clear answer on why he did that. So I can only speculate. It could be because he wanted to honor his guests. Maybe he didn't know it was a Quran. Maybe he did. We really don't know. But if you look at his entire pontificate, all the amazing things that he accomplished, there's perhaps this one blemish with a question mark. Why did he do that? I think still, when you measure it, his record is really stellar for all the tremendous world-changing things that he did accomplish.
Josh, well, how's that?
That was good and very, very honest.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. And God bless you, brother. We're just as excited as can be that you're coming into the Catholic Church. I mean, and thank you. I hope you'll continue to call. Nobody has an unmixed story, but man, I am sincere when I say I bet you had to narrow it down when you had to do 100 ways John Paul changed the world. I'm going to go to more to calls, but I do want to get this question because I think it would be a terribly remiss to celebrate his 100th birthday and not ask about this. I called him the man of the 20th century. I mean, I with all apologies to Winston Churchill or whoever else you might want to mention, I think that that's the case. And I think in particular, it's the case in a secular way, in a way that secular people can understand, because without him, the Berlin Wall doesn't fall in 1989. I think all the evidence points to the fact that his trips to Poland in particular were seminal, were absolutely necessary for the fall of communism.
Sure, absolutely. And I credit that to Providence. God knew what he was doing when John Paul II was being formed as a young man, as a young priest, coming through the Nazi regime, the communist regime, from being behind the Iron Curtain, having the stellar intellect that he did, the impact that he made on the council, and how the cardinals going into the conclave knew who he was. You know, I think I said this earlier, that when he was elected Pope in 78, he already knew how to be the Pope. Yeah. Because he had that much time. He studied in Rome. He got his doctorate in Rome. And so it was just a natural that from God's perspective, if you look at the timing. So he became Pope in 78. Less than a year later, 6-7 months later, he had this trip to Poland. Now, Moscow did not want this man to come back to Poland because they knew who he was. They misunderstood him. They thought that he was a bookworm, that he was not a threat to their regime. But I think they were taking a short-sighted view of the man. So he came back to Poland for the first time as Pope. While communism was still the religion of the country, officially at the government level, and they did their very best to minimize the visit. He came in June of 1978. He was there for 9 days, and he did not preach against communism. He preached for liberty. He preached for the things that resonate in the human heart, and the crowds chanted back, "We want God. We want God." It was like there's this ember smoldering for decades and decades under this oppressive regime.
Right.
The Poles never let go of their faith. And the communists had a very difficult time in Poland because the Catholic faith was so deeply rooted in the Polish psyche. And when this Pole was elected Pope and came back, and millions of people came to hear him live, the communists, like I said, did the best to minimize the message. They showed really tight shots of old people. They only showed little snippets of what the Pope had to say on TV. But as those 9 days went on, the crowds grew, and it really was the first crack in the Iron Curtain and the Berlin Wall, which fell just 10 years later.
And Poland was at the heart of that with the formation of Solidarity and the Solidarity strikes, which I'm sure were related to movements that grew from Pope John Paul's visits to Poland.
Oh, a tremendous upheaval. You know, you think about the martial law that was declared in the, I think it was 82, 83, in Poland, and the crackdown and the martyrs. You think of Father Jerzy Popiełuszko, who was brutally murdered by the secret police in Poland, and it was a very difficult time to be Catholic in Poland. It's a very tough time to be Polish at that time. And but John Paul continued to keep up the diplomatic pressure and the really fanning the flames of those embers that I said were burning there. He fanned those flames, and there was really nothing that could happen after that to stop it.
We're celebrating with Patrick Nowakowski of the 100th anniversary of John Paul II's birth, and he has a brand new book that celebrates John Paul called 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. I cannot go back to callers, however, without saying that fall of communism in 1989 and this Polish Pope who accomplishes that. Certainly many, many other people had a huge role on both sides of the Iron Curtain in this. But he's shot on the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima. And so and he would give the credit, I'm sure, to the fall of communism to Our Lady and the fact that she had appeared at Fatima and there had been generations of rosaries prayed and penance is done to reform that. All of this it's so obviously miraculous, I think, to the person of faith. This her reference to Russia, even in the month before the Russian Revolution, that the errors of Russia would be corrected, and then her someone who loved her so much and was shot on her day, the day of the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, is the one who comes in. Are you with me on all of this, Patrick?
You're tying that together beautifully. You know, yeah, absolutely. So Our Lady appeared in Fatima in 1917. She predicted many of the things that would happen. She called for the consecration of Russia to her Immaculate Heart, which John Paul II did during his papacy. And even Sister Lucia, the surviving member of the seers in Fatima, said that satisfied the condition that Our Lady had asked. And it was all part of this great narrative, the divine plan, as my friend Paul Kengor says in his book,
right,
to end the errors of Russia and to free Eastern Europe and Russia from the errors that were started during the Bolshevik Revolution.
Let's go to Mary in New Jersey, watching on Facebook Live. Mary, thank you so much for your call, your question for Patrick Nowakowski.
I'm sure this has been, it's embarrassing to even ask this question because I am a faithful Catholic. And I find it painful to even ask this question to priests when I get asked by people who have left the Catholic faith for other faiths. They ask me, how are you still staying a Catholic with everything that happened, with the bishops covering up, and you know, all the sexual abuse that has gone on and is still going on and is still being covered up.
Right.
And why are you still there? And my answer to them is always I believe that Jesus is present in the Eucharist, and I can't leave the church because I believe he's really present in the Eucharist. I can't, there's
Amen,
no other
Mary.
Place I can go. That's it. But yeah. that keeps me staying. But it still hurts my heart, and I don't know how to answer them when they say things about Pope John Paul, that he wasn't a saint, and they try to say that he knew about all the pedophilia and all the sexual abuse.
Oh, Mary, I think that's very, very fair, actually, and this is an important part also of evaluating his legacy, is the bishop scandal erupted under his watch. There's mm-hmm. There's no way around that.
No, absolutely.
Go ahead, Patrick, address that.
Yeah. So a number of things here. Gosh, where to start? First of all, foremost, I hear the pain in your voice, and I feel it with you, because I know people that have been abused as well. I think most of us do, and it went on for far too long, and may still be going on in some really limited circles. But at the same time, most of those cases happened before John Paul II became Pope. Although through the 80s, there were still countless abuses happening. A couple of things. The bishops during that era listened to the experts. They listened to their lawyers. They listened to the psychologists who said these men could be treated. They could come out of the treatment and they would be just fine. Well, the experts were wrong. They were very wrong. And, you know, we have to look at this from the perspective of the time. At the time, the bishops called in the people who were supposed to know what was going on and how to solve this. They listened to them. They were wrong. They were all wrong. They were all wrong. And these men should have been laicized far sooner. It should have been one strike, you're out, from the very beginning. But that's not the way it was. By the time all of this really got to the Vatican, John Paul was well into his pontificate. He probably had certainly heard about these cases. One of the things that I learned about John Paul II in my reading and my research is that he trusted people to a fault. You know, you look at Father Maciel, who is a mass abuser, a serial abuser on every single level. He lied to John Paul's face. John Paul believed him. He took the man at his word. Should he have taken him at his word? Should he have listened to the rumors? It's tough to say. You know, he was a trusting man. He looked at the fruit of the Legionaries of Christ and saw a thriving order of these very Orthodox young priests and thought, this doesn't line up. And he was right. It doesn't line up. It doesn't make sense that this should be the way it is. But Maciel was lying. And so John Paul trusted people. And perhaps that is where he should have been more cynical. He should have been more critical. He should have looked at the evidence more. Yes, absolutely. But John Paul, when it became very clear that this crisis was real and true, he said there is no excuse for anyone to abuse a child in any way, shape, or form. He put his foot down. He gave full authority to the bishops' conference, both in the United States and Ireland and in other places, to use their full authority to get to the bottom of this and to end it. And they did. They did. The Catholic Church today, with the protocols in place, is one of the safest places for children today. It's not been that way. It should have been that way for decades.
Yeah.
But to our shame, it wasn't.
Can I ask you this too, Patrick, just to follow up on Mary's question? Do you think that there's any truth to the idea that as a young priest, he had seen the church repeatedly slandered and lied about by Nazi propagandists and by communist propagandists who were tremendous enemies of the Catholic Church, and that maybe he was overly sensitive to the idea that this was that there was propaganda at work here and missed that the media reports were substantially true?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's absolutely the case. He grew up in an era where propaganda was everything. The Nazis, the communists used propaganda every single day for their gain. And lies were swirling everywhere. And how do you know what to believe? How do you know what's true? He had to deal with that every day.
Mary, God bless you, sister. Thank you very, very much for the question. We're talking about Pope John Paul II, Saint the Great, today with Patrick Nowakowski. I know I didn't get those in the right order. I'm going to get that. One of these days, I'm going to get that. Patrick has a wonderful book, a celebration of the man, of his papacy, and of the work of the Holy Spirit through those years in caring for the church through this great saintly pope. 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World, available from our Sunday Visitor Press. Right back with more of your questions for Patrick Nowakowski.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics. Pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live Friday edition. Next hour is open forum for kids. Kids open forum. Tim Staples will be here to take kids' questions. So if you're a kid and you have permission to dial the phone, the number is 888-318-7884. Maybe start dialing in about 10 minutes and we'll get you in the line. And if you've got a kid that you think should call, 888-318-7884. By the way, I'm going to continue to go to the callers who are on the line, but if you dial now, I can get you on with Patrick Nowakowski if you want to ask a question about Pope John Paul II as we approach his 100th, the 100th anniversary of his birth on Monday. 888-318-7884. Up next is Maria in Plano, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Maria, you have a question for Patrick Nowakowski?
Hi. Yes, indeedy. Pope John Paul II is my best friend. So anyway, what I want to say is that who is he a patron saint of? And when is his feast?
Okay, so what's he the patron saint of, and when is his feast?
Wow. Well, I have not heard of him being officially declared the patron saint of anything.
No.
So prior to what I'm doing now, my work now and my writing this book, I was the editor of Legatus magazine for 12 years. And I had encouraged them to make John Paul II at the board level to declare him the patron saint of Legatus, or at least the patron, because he gave great encouragement to the organization from the very beginning. I think Legatus was like a year and a half old, and they were at a pilgrimage in Rome, and he said, the world needs witnesses to the faith in business, and this is your call. And he basically gave them their marching orders to be witnesses in the marketplace for Christ. And so I'm not sure if they've actually done that officially yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have. And when is his feast day? His feast day is October 22nd, which happens to be the first day of his pontificate. It was essentially his coronation as Pope. He was elected October 16th, and he was installed as Pope on October 22nd.
So now you know all about your best friend, Maria.
Hi. No, I want to say something else. Can I say something else?
Of course. Sure. We're happy to have it.
Hi. Okay, thank you so much for allowing me to this. In 1928, there was a woman who was working for the Soviet Union, and the communist Soviet Union, she was communist, assigned her to gather evil men from the communists to enter the seminary to become clergy, every kind of clergy, priests, bishops, cardinals, popes, whatever. And so she did. So if you Google up MSN, that Bella Dot in the church, you find all the history of that.
Ah.
And this is the residual of this abusing in the church is those communists. They enter because they enter really quietly, and also they enter the government.
Okay, hang on, Maria. So I believe I have heard this before, but I didn't remember that I had heard it anywhere. But Maria says communists intentionally infiltrated the priesthood in the 1920s, starting in the 1920s. Do you know anything about that?
I've heard those stories as well, and it could well be true. Not sure how that relates to John Paul II, but that was the era where the idea of communism was really taking root, and so wouldn't surprise me.
So, Patrick, let me ask you about this then. Maria, thank you very, very much for the call. He was ill at the end of his life. Do you discuss that in the book, his time of illness?
Yeah, I do. He gave a great witness to dying with dignity. The whole culture of life was so central to his pontificate, extolling the culture of life and condemning the culture of death. And he really lived the culture of life, the dignity of the human person, care for the dying, care for the elderly. He wrote this beautiful letter to the elderly well into his pontificate. I think it was around 2002, 2003. And he said, now that I'm old, now that I'm infirm, I can relate so much better to all of you who are of age as I am, and really empathizing with people who age well and suffer because of their age and infirmities.
He was a prolific as well. He just did, like, he was a doer. I don't know how else to put that. I mean, I don't know that there's a better way to be Pope, whether it's being super active or being, you know, more measured. But like, he just made so many saints. He published so many encyclicals. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, the revision of canon law. I mean, it's just endless stuff that he did. What do you make of that?
He was a brilliant multitasker. He, even when he was archbishop in Poland, he had a desk installed in his car and a light so that he could work while he was being driven from place to place. He was always thinking into the future as well. So not only was he well-rounded, he was an athlete, he was an actor, he was a theologian, he was a philosopher, he was a very prolific writer and teacher and scholar, all of this. And it really showed. It was such a dynamic personality. So yeah, his output as a theologian and a writer and his encyclicals and his letters and his books were really tremendous. One of the most prolific popes in modern history, for sure.
And a media pope, certainly, in a way that had never been imagined before.
No, absolutely. He was, so Paul VI was the first pope to leave Europe in, I forget what it was, like 500-600 years. Paul VI came to the United States, he went to Israel, and I think France and Egypt. John Paul II took that and he went to two-thirds of the countries on the planet. If you take all of his air miles, it's from the earth to the moon, back to the earth, and back to the moon.
Or
30 times around the world, literally 30 times circling the globe.
And why do you think he did it? Like, what do you think is his motivation for getting out of the Vatican?
Well, I think he understood that he was pastor to the world, that when Jesus said, go out to all the nations and baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit and make disciples, he took that literally. He said, this is the Great Commission, and I can do it, and I will. I mean, prior to Paul VI, you know, getting around the world the way he did was not easy. John Paul was 58 years old when he was elected. He was young, he was vigorous, and he took this Great Commission to preach the gospel literally, and he took it to the ends of the earth.
The book is 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. It's from Our Sunday Visitor Press. The author is Patrick Nowakowski. I think I can get one more caller in before I no. All right. I'm not going to be able to get one more caller in. What else would you want to share with us? Like, what would you like someone to know who, like you said, they're graduating high school now. They didn't really have him as a pope. What would you like them to know about him?
Right. So I wrote this book for two main audiences. For the people who haven't a sense of who John Paul II was, the young people who are entering college, who were perhaps 10, 15 years old when he died. They'd be much past college by then. They were maybe 10 years old when he died, and they really don't know what he did, what he accomplished. So what I try to do is unpack his legacy in a unique way. Most of these 100 ways are just a page. They're a page and a half. So it's a quick dive into John Paul II in Israel, John Paul II and Divine Mercy, John Paul II and Dying with Dignity, John Paul II and his friendship with Ronald Reagan, his interactions with Padre Pio. You can read that and get a really good sense in just a page and a half. So it's a, I guess, a primer in John Paul II for young folks. And then also folks who are our age, who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, who grew up with John Paul II, we missed so much. Oh my gosh, I thought I knew a lot about John Paul II. I mean, I met him 5 times and I studied him, but there's so much more to the man.
Patrick Nowakowski, thanks so much. I hope that lots and lots and lots of folks will get it and enjoy reading 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. And remember him next Monday, 100th anniversary of the birth of Pope John Paul II. Patrick Nowakowski, thank you very, very much.
Appreciate it, Si.
All right, coming up next, Tim Staples. We're going to close out the work week. with Kids Open Forum. If you're a kid and you got a question about God, or you got a question about the sacraments, or a question about baby Jesus or grown-up Jesus or anything else, you're welcome to call. You got to get permission, and then you can dial the phone, 888-318-7884. If you're under 18, the next hour is entirely for you. Kids Open Forum, 888-318-7884.